It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Good morning, everybody. Hello, hello, hello. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil is behind the glass. The chatty house at youtube.com/ESPN1320 is already cooking. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and we're hanging out with you until noon. Good morning, everybody, on 1320 AM and 98.5 FM HD2. Of course, YouTube and Twitch at youtube.com/ESPN1320 and twitch.tv/ESPN1320. We have the free Odyssey app. That's a free app where you can listen to this radio station along with a bunch of other awesome Odyssey content, music, podcasts, all that jazz. But search ESPN1320, favorite that station, and then you can listen to us live anywhere in the world.
There it is.
On the free Odyssey app, the James Hamm and Kyle Madsen Show, that's the podcast. Please subscribe, even if you listen live, subscribe to the pod. That way, if you miss anything, you can easily access the show. Joe works very hard to get those podcasts up for you.
Yeah.
Anyways.
The Chatty House is undefeated.
It's just cooking today.
You're just ridiculous.
I thought the toe jokes would go through yesterday. No.
The great toe jokes.
They continued today. It's my, I just spilled garbage all over the place. Anyways, great start to the program. It's my Friday today, guys. That's why I'm a little bit Friday-ish today.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm going on this trip with my dad.
This is really cool.
Yeah, and I've talked about this before, but we're going to Wrigley Field and Fenway Park.
Okay.
We're knocking them out in, so fly to Chicago, hit a game at Wrigley, fly to Boston, hit a game at Boston, come home.
I've been to Wrigley, but I haven't been to Fenway, and I haven't caught a game at Wrigley.
Right.
I did the tour.
Right.
And the tour is unbelievable.
And it turns out they do a tour on game days, but it's a limited version of the tour that you did.
Okay.
So you like walk around the concourse, and you get access to a couple of places, but not nearly as in-depth as the one you did.
Okay.
So really, really excited for this trip. We've been talking about it for like 10 years. And the impetus was, hey, if they decide to tear down Wrigley Field.
Yep.
And rebuild, they did it with old Yankee Stadium, right?
Yep.
Tore down Yankee Stadium, just built a new one. If they decide to do that, tickets at Wrigley Field are going to be impossible to get, and we're going to lose out on this opportunity to go watch a baseball game at this place we've never been. So we decided to just do Wrigley and Fenway back to back, knock it all out at once. Legitimately, we've been talking about this for like 10 years, and we finally lined it up. And this year we went, all right, we're doing these days, and we're really excited about it. I have some questions for you guys, though.
Okay.
One, what do I wear? Because here's my plan. The weather's going to be warm. It's not like I need jackets. So my plan is I have the Kelly Green Oakland jersey that I'm going to wear with I have a Cubs hat and a Red Sox hat.
Okay.
And I'll that way I'm participating in the ballpark culture, but I'm not posing as a fan, which is really my greatest concern. Is I don't want to come across like, oh, hey, I'm a Red Sox fan. They're like, no, I'll wear the hat while I'm there. It's Red Sox Yankees, so I'm gonna tap in with the Red Sox hat.
Okay. So I think that if I were to go to a Cubs game, I would go spend some cash on an Ernie Banks jersey.
Ooh, I had not even considered this.
Yeah, just like, you know what? I'm going to go full nostalgia. You could do Sandberg or Grace, but...
You could
do a Ron Say jersey.
Come on. Ron Say, that's crazy.
You could do a Ferguson Jenkins jersey, Rick Sutcliffe jersey. No, I would go full Ernie Banks.
Ooh, Fergie Jenkins would be fire.
Yeah.
I would cop that. Little Billy Williams.
Fergie Jenkins autograph that sits behind me in the...
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we've
talked about this before.
It's my brother's.
Nah, yours. It's in your well, Zoom background.
So. Yeah. It's in my. I claim all of those baseballs now.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's my plan. But I kind of like that idea. I had not considered just buying because you're
crazy,
wearing a Cubs jersey, but it's got
throwback.
It's a historic thing.
Yeah, that's what I would go. I would go full historic. And then
When
you go to Boston, you could do a Wade Boggs.
Oh, I'd go Ted Williams.
Or you could do a Ted Williams.
Ted Williams, one of my favorite
Jim Rice, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dwight Evans.
Why can't I think of his name? Only got to hit a grand slam in an all-star game. Fred Lynn.
Oh, Fred Lynn. Yeah. Fred Lynn. You could do Bill
Buckner. Nixon.
You could be Bill Buckner
no,
just to mess
R.I.P.
with people.
No, come on. I'm not going to do all that. Yeah, I think I'm going to go. If I find a historic jersey, maybe that's the route I'll go.
Okay.
But I'm not wearing an active player jersey while I'm there. I'm not pulling up to a Cubs game in a Pete Crow Armstrong jersey, you know?
Yeah, but you're
having an awesome year. But
he's a good player.
Yeah, he's really good.
I might get one of those.
You could probably show up, though, and find stuff, you know, nearby or just somewhere at a nice shop in Chicago.
Oh, I thought you meant like a street vendor jersey.
Oh, that would be fun.
$20 for a jersey. Yeah, I'll cop that. Okay. Here's the other question I have. Should we watch all 9 innings from our seats, or do we do some ballpark meandering and just kind of get a different perspective?
I would get there at least an hour early.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get there like
maybe as soon as it's open. Yeah. And then do the wandering then. And then when you're there, I would sit and hang out in my seats. Because like when you go to, like I went to old Yankee Stadium before it was blown up. And, you know, they do the calls like to all the players.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to miss any of the crazy stuff that happens inside the stadium because there's, you know, we all know like in Oakland, there used to be the drums mm-hmm. and all that stuff or, you know, but when you're at like some of the older parks, they've had, you know, decades and decades and decades of, you know, doing something specific during warmups and stuff.
Wrigley, you want to make sure you are butt in seat for the 7th inning stretch.
Yeah, of course.
So that's why I it feels like we're going to do some wandering before. And then once we're in our seats, we're in our seats.
Yeah.
That's probably the move because we're not buying multiple seats. We're not going to try and sneak down. Not going to go to Red Sox Yankees and try and find an open seat somewhere. That's great.
Okay, you're not either that or you're not going to sit in the bleachers and try to catch a home run or
yeah, no, probably not.
Ball.
Okay. No, we haven't. We're going to do the like day of ticket thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because why not?
Yeah.
It's available to us. This is a really fun thing. It's my first time at a really historic park. I was trying to count. I think it's 10 and 11 for me on the ballparks I've been to.
Okay.
I've been to all the California ones. That's A's, Giants, Dodgers, Angels, Padres.
Okay.
Been to all 5 of those, and I've hit Arizona when I lived down there. I've been to the old Rangers Stadium, the ballpark in Arlington.
Yep.
I've been to new Yankee Stadium. That's 8.
Okay.
And then I've been to Citizens Bank Park, Philly Stadium.
That's random. I should have taken more time to go to some of these parks because, like, I've been to Chicago. I've been to Boston. The only one I've caught a game in is New York. I've been to Toronto while, you know, covering the finals, and there's literally Blue Jays games going on, and the stadium's right down the street.
Yeah.
All I had to do is walk over and get a ticket and walk in.
There's still time, James.
Yeah, maybe I'll do a tour, like, a bunch of parks, but you kind of have to, like, you're going with your dad. Like, my dad's not a baseball fan, and, like, my oldest is... But we'd be more probably like go to England and go catch a bunch of like old soccer stadiums, like go to Old Trafford where Manchester United plays.
Okay, but that's not the thing. We're talking about going to baseball stadiums.
I know.
So just do that instead.
I know.
It's much less cumbersome than getting to England, I promise.
Yeah, but once you're there,
you're
it's
doing
not
this
that
over
far
half a week.
To go to a bunch of places.
I think it's the most historic place I'll ever have watched games, Wrigley and Fenway both.
Yeah.
Like, I've been to Candlestick Park, but I never watched baseball at Candlestick Park. I don't watch football there.
Yeah, so...
I know it's a historic stadium and all that jazz.
I saw Rick Rushel throw a two-hitter against the Mets and, like...
Nice.
I don't, like, when the Mets were great. Like, it was probably 87, 88.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I'd never watched baseball there, but I've been to a bunch of football games there. I've seen, obviously, the Coliseum is historic, but not in the way that Wrigley and Fenway are.
No.
And then all the other ballparks were relatively new. Arizona, San Diego, Dodger Stadium. That was cool because I've seen like so much baseball history has happened to Dodger Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just cool. It was like seeing a celebrity kind of where you're sitting in the stands and you're going, wow, this is a view I've seen on TV hundreds of times.
That's what going to old Yankee Stadium was like.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, we didn't even do like the tour of this stuff, but we had gone to the Hall of Fame earlier in the trip. So kind of got that out of the way.
So that's what I'm up to over the next few days. That's why today is my Friday. But yesterday, we're going to talk. We've got coming up in a bit. We've got some. Well, James has a Kings trade idea.
Yeah.
If you listen to this program, you know we love a Kings trade idea. I had one yesterday. James got one today. Some news from Brian Windhorst that the offseason is going to pick up maybe quicker than normal and be busier than normal. We'll dive into that and some other NBA news. And the 49ers begin mandatory minicamp today. I want to toss that in as well at some point. But we have to start with the A's. That's not a thing we typically do on this program, but the A's have the best defensive center fielder in baseball.
He's turning into that very quickly.
If you've not been following, the name Denzel Clark should be on your radar because he made an unbelievable catch in Toronto where he robbed a home run last week.
Mm-hmm.
Then he came home, and you probably saw the amazing catch he made against the Orioles where he covered 300 feet or whatever insane number it was and then made the grab as he crashed into the wall. Just an incredible, like, one-of-one type of catch. The type of catch where you go, well, man, he's not going to top that one. And then he did. If you're listening on the radio, this call is courtesy of the FanDuel Sports Network. Here it is.
Nolan Schanuel with a fly ball left center field. Denzel Clark racing back. He's all the way back. He's at the wall. He climbs it. He caught it. I can't believe it. Denzel Clark with a sensational catch. How did he do it?
Look at this face. Look at Schanuel's face. The disbelief. Can you imagine? You're a Major League Baseball player, all right? You tag a ball, and you're like, that's out. I hit a home run.
Oh, yeah.
Tack one onto my total. I'm going to make a little money. Come on. That's a homer. And then Denzel Clark climbs. This is ridiculous. This wasn't, you know, sometimes people go, oh, he robbed a home run, and you're going, I don't know if that was going to go over.
It might not have even been a home run. Yeah.
I don't think that was out.
Yeah.
And then there's times where the guy kind of like leaps and like gets it and it's just barely going to clear the wall. But okay, yeah, he leaped. Denzel Clark straight up climbs the wall. Look at this.
He gets his whole entire upper body.
If you're listening on the radio, he has a hand on top of the fence. And you've probably seen this by now, by the way. MLB tweeted out the highlight. It had 11,000 retweets, which is just insane engagement. I went through the only other videos with more than 1,000 retweets were different replays of this catch.
Oh my God.
From MLB. He has, I saw a number. His glove is 11.3 feet off the ground.
Oh, no way.
He has his hand on top of the wall. And again, if you haven't seen this yet, I cannot stress enough. Google Denzel Clark and it's going to be articles about the catch. Just click on one. The video will be there. His waist is at the top of the wall.
Yeah, how tall is the wall?
Wall's got to be
8 feet.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
7 or 8 feet.
Yeah, I almost want to see what it looks like when he's like approaching the wall.
Well, Denzel Clark is 6'4".
Yeah, the crazy.
Hey, that wall's got to be 8 feet tall.
Yeah, it's got to be an 8 foot tall.
So he
wall.
Leaps and gets his hand on top of the wall, and then has his backhand, is able to track the ball while leaping and grabbing the wall.
Yeah.
And then snags it, reaching out. He's in like jump man almost position.
Yeah.
As he catches this baseball.
He stayed up there too. Like, it's not like he had to wait for a second.
Yeah.
He had to wait for a second up there.
Well, that and he snared it once he's there.
Right.
That's absurd. The thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
How many times we've seen people climb the wall before and they just miss it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just, you want, and it then almost falls over the wall.
Oh, yeah.
It's like he's laying down on top of the wall.
Yeah. His hips are on the wall. Yeah.
Just an, I saw this yesterday and you see it live. And you're like, man, what?
Yeah.
Like, wow, that was a nice guy. And then you see the replays. And it just doesn't, it's legit. This wasn't like, wow, great play. This is legitimately maybe the best catch you'll ever see.
Yeah, it's crazy too.
It goes in the conversation for best catch you'll ever see.
Yeah, especially best home run going over the fence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that, like, they brought him up. And when they did, again, we talked about it. Like, they should have pinch hit for him last weekend, they're losing games and stuff.
Not a great hitter.
He's not a great hitter yet. He's got a lot of work to do on that end. And for that matter, he's really raw as a fielder because he's made a couple of errors already, and not throwing errors. He's made a couple of errors on balls where he should have been able to scoop clean and he doesn't.
Kind of Eric Burns-esque.
Yeah, yeah. But there is like a ceiling that you have no idea what it is as a fielder. And that's where you get these plays here where it's just absolutely crazy, over the top greatness. So I'm here for it.
Yeah, man. The talent is out of control. So again, if we're looking for silver linings, he has lost 7-4, by the way. But if you're looking for silver linings, they might have the best, most exciting defensive center fielder in baseball.
Yeah, and the best young shortstop in Major League Baseball mm-hmm. is still batting .366 after going 0-4.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got a lot of potential. And they brought Blade up and put him in left field, and all of a sudden their defensive outfield is spectacular with Lawrence Butler and with Clark in center. Yeah. Interesting stuff. They've got to get better, though.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about Denzel Clark as a hitter and whether he can stay up. But, man, even as a defensive replacement in center for the last couple of innings, because the A's, when you have a pitching staff that can't get outs,
yeah,
having defenses that create outs matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a big reason their pitching staff struggles is because, man, defensively they haven't been good.
Nope.
They've been actually putrid. Really, really bad defensively.
Yeah.
And if you have guys who are not making outs that you're throwing, and then also not creating outs, you're going to have a really, really hard time. And Denzel Clark last night, I mean, that's a home run that turns into an out.
Yep.
That's legit. Their defensive run saved is a stat. That's one defensive run saved.
There it is. You got one.
Just saw it happen.
Now let's make up for the other 40-something.
Do you know how sick a catch has to be to, like, permeate the national consciousness?
It's crazy.
For the Today Show or Good Morning America?
Oh, yeah. My wife texts, hey,
to show a catch.
The catch is on the Today Show.
By the A's?
Yeah.
By a guy named Denzel Clark and not by Aaron Judge or Shohei Ohtani?
Oh, yeah.
Not that Shohei Ohtani would catch because he doesn't play defense, but.
There it is.
That was for you, Joe.
I
said a mean thing about my favorite player in the league just for you.
I really appreciate that.
That's funny.
Anyways, we've got a ton of NBA stuff to get into today. James Hamm has a trade idea, and we're going to get into that. Brian Windhorst says the offseason is going to get messy fast. We'll talk about that. And the 49ers begin mandatory minicamp today. Things to take away, things to watch, and that's it. That's all I got. 49ers minicamp, James trade idea. That's a lot of teases. Tap in. Insiders, Jiffy Lube, Joe, get me out of here. All right, we're talking a lot about the NBA offseason. 49ers started minicamp today. We'll talk about that too. But part of the reason we're hitting the NBA offseason so hard is because once the finals end, it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian Windhorst on ESPN today on First Take had this to say about the upcoming NBA offseason, because it doesn't sound like teams are going to slow play what they're doing this summer.
The NBA offseason is going to happen faster than normal. The NBA offseason is going to happen faster than normal.
Okay.
She's working on patience with you, Stephen A. That's what she said.
I don't know what she's trying to say.
No, I wasn't talking about you, but when I did read the Mel Robbins book, Let Them, I did think of you.
Okay.
Good Lord.
I think the majority of the action in this offseason is going to occur around the draft. Typically, we get most of the action between June 30th and about July 3rd. I think this year, because it's not really a free agent year, it's going to be, and there's going to be...
Okay, that's the worst clip that's ever been played on this radio station. I'm so sorry, everybody.
I mean, how do you...
My God!
How do you interrupt a guy and say it'll be earlier? Like, he's in the middle of explaining...
Holy crap.
A big thing about
how show sucks.
They are going to, like, we're going to see a really, really early trade season, and to have him just, like, interrupt in the middle of the guy, like, trying to announce that, it'll be earlier.
That was insane. Brian Windhorst is trying to say something real on First Take, and Molly and Stephen A. are bickering about something, and Stephen A. can't wipe that look off his face.
No.
And then interrupts Windy! How dare you, sir?
That's right.
Anyways, Brian Windhorst said the NBA offseason, if you missed it there, he said that the NBA offseason is going to happen faster than normal. Said Shams has cleared his calendar and he's preparing to work his hardest around the draft. You're going to get your action very soon. And that's, I thought the opposite would happen, because you've got Kevin Durant, very, very likely on the move, would be stunned if he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And while he doesn't move the needle the way he did 10 years ago, he's not a low-level player.
No, but I don't feel like he's the guy who's going to hold up the trade deadline. Because
no,
Jimmy Butler is who kind of like, everyone was waiting to see what was going to happen with Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
And that was holding up a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Kevin Durant is part of that anymore.
No, but I think there will be a lot of teams in on him where that could be a significant trade, where once that is off the table and maybe the Rockets and the Spurs and maybe Golden State and maybe Minnesota are all trying to get Kevin Durant, okay, he goes to Houston or San Antonio, and all of a sudden all these other teams start working on other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis is the one that could hold up the market. Because,
yes,
and this is why it's interesting, because if Giannis hems and haws on whether he wants out or not, and the Bucks are like, we're not getting rid of him, and then Giannis in late June goes, hey, you know what, I want out. Now all of a sudden that kickstarts everything. So for me, what the Bucks are doing or not doing with Giannis is going to determine a lot of what happens this offseason, but also I think there's going to be so much movement that the Giannis thing doesn't necessarily freeze everything. Because the Rockets would be in play for sure, right?
Yep. You would think.
The Spurs would theoretically be in play. But also, the Spurs and Rockets might go, hey, we kind of like what we're doing here. We don't want to... They want everything for Giannis, which makes sense. And we don't want to uproot our team.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if Giannis is getting traded, it's going to be one of those deals that, like, it doesn't look right in the beginning, and it doesn't look right 5 years down the road. Like, you're just going to have such a difficult time getting value. When I look at the difference, though, between Giannis and Kevin Durant, you're basically looking at, like, an almost 37-year-old
mm-hmm.
in Durant versus a 30-year-old in Giannis, and... to be honest with you, I think at this point Durant is just nowhere near the quality of player that Antetokounmpo is,
right?
And so you're basically, I think one of them is going to cost you, because of the contract, because he's only mm-hmm. under contract for 1 year, might cost you one or two first round picks and a bunch of salary to match. Mm-hmm. And that's where you have to really, you know, again, if you're San Antonio, like you're buying a 1 year rental. And you're going to have to give up Devin Vassell. You're going to have to give up Keldon Johnson. You're going to mm-hmm. have to give up Harrison Barnes.
Sure.
You're going to have to gut all of your depth in order to make that move.
Mm-hmm.
And who even knows if he wants to stay there long term? I mean, I would assume once you got there, he'd sign a 2-year extension or something.
And what's long term?
It's
2 years and he's not ascending.
No, he's going to be 37. And sure, I think it would work.
Mm-hmm.
But
work to what extent?
Yeah, that, and if you're going to extend him, and then all of a sudden Wembanyama's contract's coming up, you're going to have to think long and hard about what you're going to do with De'Aaron Fox, whether you're going
to
get
De'Aaron
Fox.
You already have to do that.
Well, I think you have to, especially when you land the number two pick.
Mm-hmm.
The right move for the Spurs is probably to not extend De'Aaron Fox and to not trade for Kevin Durant and to build with the number two pick in the draft and make savvy moves to improve your roster.
Sure.
And then, you know, use some draft capital to improve your roster, but look at 2-3 years down the road.
Yeah.
That's probably the best bet for the San Antonio Spurs. It's not to go out and get a Kevin Durant and try to win something this year, because I don't even know if you're going to be able to piece something together.
Yeah, you could trade for Kevin Durant and maybe make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Is that, if that's what they want to do, just to get back, they're like, okay, but... I think teams are going to look at it because copycat leagues, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think teams are going to look at Indiana, and they're going to look at Oklahoma City, and they're going to go, man, these teams built cores and then just kind of added pieces around it. If you're the Rockets, because the Bucks are going to start with Amen Thompson.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Amen Thompson and a bunch of other stuff. Like, ugh.
I mean, if you're Houston and you can get Antetokounmpo's, again, he's 30, and you're going to give up, let's say you can avoid giving up Amen Thompson. Let's say you're giving up Jabari, you're giving up Jalen Green,
mm-hmm.
And you're giving up, you know, Whitmore, one other big time up and coming. Reed Sheppard. Okay, so we got Reed Sheppard. And then what if you had to give up like Tari Eason as well? So you're giving up like four young players and three first round picks for Giannis.
Man, I would, it's just, and this is, this is where the offseason is going to be interesting, is if I'm the Rockets and I'm ready to give up those assets, I think you can break those assets into four other trades and probably improve your team more than giving them up for one player.
No, I'm with you.
Fully understanding, by the way, that Giannis is a top 15 player of all time, or wherever you want to put him. Yeah. He's unbelievable. He's an perennial MVP candidate.
And a top three player still now.
Yes.
I just think that you're always going to have the question of, is he going to want to stay wherever he's going? And he's under contract for three more years. He has a player option at $66.8 million for the 27-28 season. Like, if I, you know, again, we just go Kings-wise, like, I think getting a bunch of young prospects, like, from Houston, if if they're going to open up and say, hey, let's do this.
Sure.
And everything is predicated around Jalen Green. You have to, because Jalen Green is a guy who's making 30, and you got to get up to $50 million bucks just to make this thing work, dollars and cents-wise. So you're going to have to come up with a bunch of players who are making 10, 12 million bucks in order to get up, you know, at least three or four players to get up to that $50
million
mark. Yeah. And again, if I were, do you like that deal, or would you rather start over with your own draft picks? I mean, with draft picks that you select the players, and that's where, you know, again, I don't think the Kings would do this, but they, well, maybe they would, but if you're the Kings and you can offer up Zach LaVine and Devin Carter to match salaries, and give up five first round picks, including three of your own unprotected and the two unprotected, one from San Antonio, one from Minnesota. I mean, five first round picks, I still don't think that's enough. You know, I don't. I mean, because again, you're going to have to match salary, but I'm not sure that I would take the Houston deal, and I'm not sure I would take the Kings deal.
Yeah.
But those are like paths that you could go down. And I think, you know, again, Giannis probably wouldn't want to be in Sacramento. And it would be tough to build a team quickly.
Well, I just if the Bucks are steadfast in, we're going to gut the team that we trade Giannis to. I would imagine if you're a GM and you're watching the finals, and frankly, if you watched Minnesota go to the conference finals back to back years, you're probably going, man, I don't want to do that. I don't think that's the best path to a championship, gutting this young roster we have. So let's say Giannis doesn't move. There's still LaMelo Ball, Trae Young, Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
There are still so many huge names. And then you got Lauri Markkanen's available to be traded now.
Yep.
John Collins. Has anyone been on the trading block more often than John Collins?
No. Especially for someone who only got traded once. No.
John Collins, Cam Johnson, there are, and all of these players, I get that none of them are the quality of Giannis, but they're all really good players. The Kings would love to have a couple of those guys.
Oh, yeah.
You would kill to have a couple of those guys.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. If I'm the Kings, I'm trying to get involved in many of these trades, because it does feel like something big is going to happen, and you can be a third team, you can be, you know, a fourth team, or you can be a primary team, you know, and try to get involved. And this is where, because of the quality of players and the size of those contracts, and the fact that you have a guy like, it is possible that Zach LaVine could get involved in one of these, that the Kings could get involved using Zach LaVine. And that's because he makes like $47 million and $49 million over the next 2 years, right? But there are just not a lot of players out there with contracts that are expiring like this.
Yeah.
And for a team who's giving up, like, say, 3 years of Giannis or 4 years of another player that's around that type of that money, just that money alone could save them tens of millions of dollars in luxury tax or apron money. So, like, again, I think it is possible that where normally I would say Zach LaVine's contract is not going to be in play, hey, if the Kings need to do whatever it takes to get better, up.
That's bottom line. And that's where I wonder, because and the Kings angle on this is, okay, they'd be involved with these players, and it's less about specific players they'd be involved with for me, though, and more, okay, so you have a new GM in Scott Perry. Who is having conversations with everyone in the building, getting on the same page with everyone, and we're all put. That new front office is going to have to hit the ground running.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you're in a spot where you're like, okay, well, we can slow play this. We're going to see how it goes. We're still getting to know some guys. We're still piecing together who's part of the core and who's not. And now all of a sudden, all these trades are happening. You're going to be on the outside looking in. And all of a sudden, your big offseason move is Tyus Jones.
Oh, yeah.
That's so hopefully, Scott Perry, who is plugged in around the league, that's one of the things we always say. Scott Perry likes everybody, Scott Perry is friends with everybody. He's, mm-hmm.
Knows everyone.
Knows everyone.
Yep.
Hopefully, he's got a beat on this and is already having those conversations with other teams or with other agents, because that's my biggest fear here.
Well, I can tell you that right now, they've already had multiple conversations around the league with multiple teams. Like, they are not sitting around waiting. They are fielding calls daily, and maybe even at this point hourly, because we're getting close. Mm-hmm. Like, they are fielding calls nonstop. I know that for a fact. And whether that means that some of their players are being sought after, or whether they're going and hitting up other teams and trying to work something, mm-hmm. That's why I keep warning everybody, like, do not be surprised if some of your favorite Kings are no longer here in Sacramento at the end of this. This could be a bloodbath for Kings fans, where they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that just happened. I can't, like, you know.
Outside of DeRozan, Domas, and...
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you could LaVine. Get to a point where, like, they can't trade LaVine, but they can trade Malik Monk. They can't trade DeMar DeRozan's contract, but, like, so many teams have called about Keegan Murray. And you got to start thinking about that. Like, if you can't improve your team, no matter what, that's the goal. Like, you got to find ways to improve the team. Yep. You're not good enough. Your talent, whatever happened last year, like, I think the final, we predicted that that team would win more like 50, 52 games. Mm-hmm. When it was all said and done, I think they were lucky to win 40. Like, they yeah. scrape by, and you know, especially when you do the changeover at midseason and dump Fox. Like, this team is in disarray, and it's going to take a strong-willed person to come in and make very, very difficult and uncomfortable decisions mm-hmm. that will have long-lasting ripple effects with this franchise. Mm-hmm. And you're hoping, fingers crossed, that they get those things right.
Yeah.
And that's at the end of the day, that's all you can hope for, is that, you know, whatever Scott Perry does here, that he gets it right. But do not think that they're just sitting around waiting for draft night to see if they might be able to get back into the first round. They might do that. They could get back into the first round.
Sure.
But I also think that they could trade all kinds of players on draft night, or yeah. all kinds of players on July 1st mm-hmm. and move themselves in a position to either be a free agent player or be in a position to, like, have completely different needs on July 1st than they had today.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh my gosh, like, how are they going to fill this, and this position? Like, you trade Domantas Sabonis, you need another starting center. I don't, you know, Jonas Valanciunas is a perfectly nice guy.
If you want to be competitive, yeah.
But I'm not counting on Jonas Valanciunas to go out there and play 35 minutes a night. Nope. You know, you trade DeMar DeRozan, all of a sudden you need another small forward.
A lot
forward.
Of offense, yep.
You need another forward. You need another scorer, mm-hmm. right? And that's where I think everyone has to kind of, like, understand that this is, when you pull out one piece of the puzzle,
mm-hmm.
like, how does that impact the other pieces? And can you build this thing the right way, like, very quickly? I'm not sure that they can, but I would be very surprised if they weren't movers and shakers.
Well, then, you have a trade idea.
I do.
We'll get to that next. The biggest thing for me is just pick a path. If that means they decide Sabonis, Keegan, and Keon, and Monk are untouchable, and they're going to build around them, okay, just commit to that. Mm-hmm. Not what I would do, but if that's what they do, if it's dump everything, or, man, they got a godfather offer for Keegan and he's gone, or Keon or Monk and they're gone, just commit to it. That's the biggest thing for me. So a tough offseason ahead, a busy offseason ahead with a lot of tough decisions.
Yep.
Is where we're headed. But you've got a trade idea. You yep. played around the trade machine.
I did.
And did you have multiple here?
I do.
Did I read that correctly? You have multiple trade ideas.
I have a two
My
part.
Very favorite thing. You have two of my favorite thing. I can't wait. That's James Hamm. He's Joe Brazil. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is the Insiders on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Trade ideas, baby. Let's go. It's our favorite thing. Sorry if that was super loud. We love a trade idea.
We do.
Brian Windhorst says the NBA offseason is going to ramp up right away. NBA draft. Right around the draft.
Yeah.
It's when stuff is going to hit the fan. Going to see a lot of player movement. I think there's also teams, maybe it's the Jazz, just picking a team with some good veterans who they could probably move, are going to try really hard to maybe move up because there's some blue chip talent at the top of the draft. And they're fifth, sixth. Maybe try and package that pick with something else to move up.
Yeah, I could see that. I also, like, I think with just the way this draft is, like, it's super top heavy. But then there's a lot of question marks from then on after you get past, like, the top five.
Right.
Like, a lot of wide open draft. Like, if someone were to take somebody at 8 or 20, there isn't a huge, big difference between, right?
Yeah.
I don't know this is a draft that I would get back into. You know, again, I had someone tell me, like, if you think this is like a 16 player draft, like, and you're going to move back into this draft, you better, if you're, let's say you're going to move to the top 10, there better be 10 guys that you're in love with.
Yeah.
Like, straight up, there better be 10 players that you're in love with, because if not, why'd you move in? Why'd you move into that spot? Like, it doesn't make any sense to get to a spot. And if you get to 10 and you realize that there's five players that you like at number 10, you probably should have traded for number 13 or number 14 or number 15. Like, that's like, this isn't a draft that I think that anyone is going into and saying, okay, look, we're going to reset all of our depth or anything like that.
Well, it's like what we talked about with the 49ers picking 11th in this year's NFL draft.
Yeah.
Like, they could pick 11th and trade back to 20 and get probably a similar caliber player.
Well, and that's
very, very similar here.
That's why you take a flyer at 11 on a guy that has, like, unlimited potential but hasn't really delivered yet, because at least you're banking on upside. And so for the Kings, they can't really bank on they should be a team who's banking on upside, but because of the age of your team and everything else, I would expect the Kings to be a much bigger player on July 1st than they are, like, on draft night.
Why?
Because once you get to July 1st, you have access to your 2026 pick, right? So you can't trade that pick until the new, well, you can trade that. You can have a deal set up that will trade that pick, but you get your 2032 pick.
You can agree to terms of a deal.
Yeah.
But can't execute the trade until July 1.
Yeah, so like the day of the draft, they can't trade their 2026 first round pick because of the stepping rule, and they already have their 2025 gone.
Right.
Right, but you get 5-6 days later and you hit to July 1st, that trade is, once a draft happens, it's over. The 2025 pick is gone. It's no longer on your books. You can now trade your 2026 pick. But you have to wait until the reset of the calendar year. So I would not be surprised if the Kings are more in the big trade market around that time than they are on draft day, unless you got some other deal that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Right? So there's a report out right now. I want to get to your trade ideas, because you got a two-part trade that's really fun here, and I want to get to it. But there's also this report that came out this morning from Grant Afseth at RG Media.
Yeah.
And he reported that Darius Garland has drawn trade interest from the Kings. And Trae Young has also drawn trade interest from the Kings. I want to put a pin in the Trae Young thing for a second.
Okay.
We talked a lot about Darius Garland yesterday.
We did.
This seems like one of those things where my knee-jerk reaction to this was, of course they're interested. They should be interested in every good point guard.
Yeah, yeah. You should have a giant whiteboard with tiers of point guards and who's obtainable and who's not.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up. You should have, like, it all mapped out. Like, if you can get player XYZ, you know, with this trade, this trade, this trade. Yeah.
The thing I'm interested in, because it doesn't shock me that the Kings are like, yeah, hey, Darius got, we talk about Trae Young, LaMelo Ball, John Morant. Those are the three. But then we brought up Andrew Nembhard. Mm-hmm. Is he Derek White, Drew Holiday? Like, there's all these. Darius Garland should 100% be on that list. Whether the Cavs want to trade him or not, don't know. But my interest is more, is he just on the list? Or is he a player that the Kings have circled and, okay, hey, here's this list of 10 names. We're going to underline the three that we're going to overpay for. We're going to bend over backward. We need to get Darius Garland. We think he is the key piece to build around moving forward. And if that's true, if that's the case, are they willing to make, are they willing to involve Keegan Murray in that deal? Are they willing to involve several first round picks in that deal? Because if they're not, then they might wind up disappointed in the quality of player they're going to go get.
Well, yeah, I think here's the difficult thing. Like, if you have a whole list of players, you're not just going to randomly grab a player off the list, call that team and say, can I get that player?
Sure. Right.
And then I'm just going to do that deal.
Yeah.
No. So I think the way that this was written from the article that we're from RG Sports, whatever it is.
RG Media.
RG Media.
RG.org.
Okay.
It's the website.
The way that, like, if I'm reading this correctly, though, they say the Kings have interest in Garland, but also on top of that, Trae Young came up in recent talks, and the King, while Sacramento has interest in the Kings, multiple sources told RG that the Atlanta Hawks have spoken with the Kings on a potential framework centered around Trae Young in recent weeks.
Oh.
However, those trades have since stalled. So this is why I'm bringing this up right now in this discussion. It makes sense that you have on your board what the framework of a Trae Young trade looks like, mm-hmm. what the framework of a Darius Garland trade looks like, what a possible LaMelo Ball trade looks like. Have conversations, build out. And then you look at the three or four or five deals that are sitting there that you think you can get done or that you might be able to get done. And then you aggressively attack whichever one you think is right. And then if that one doesn't work out, you might go to the next one. So either way, you need to build out framework for these trades in advance and start building something that makes a lot of sense, like now. So then when it is time to go, you don't want to get swooped. You don't want to have some other team come in and offer Russell Westbrook for Kyle Kuzma and Montrezl Harrell instead of the deal that you had for Buddy Hield.
Oof.
Yeah, so you got to get all your ducks in a row. You need to touch base. You need to build out frameworks of a trade, what a potential trade would look like with each individual team, and then choose the logical step for your franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gauging age, gauging production, gauging position, gauging whether or not they're a two-way player, they're just an offensive player, whether a pass first or a score first point guard, like all of these things.
And if you acquire that player, are there other dominoes that fall where if you are acquiring Trae Young,
yep,
you know that, man, there's a kind of specific type of player that you're going to need to put alongside him, or players that you're going to need to put alongside him.
No, totally.
Do we have those moves in place? Yeah, that's where I was talking about earlier when we say that Brian Windhorst said that the offseason is going to get moving quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's where, like, man, you are not going to be able to afford to fall behind because it's not one move that needs to happen.
Yeah, especially with Sacramento. I mean, I'm Sacramento and you're going to play in the pool of, like, where all the Sharks are, right? You're looking for a frontline NBA starting point guard. Mm-hmm. If that's your main objective, you're looking at $40 to $50 million player.
Yeah.
And you either have two of those moves in you, or you have one of those moves, or you might have three, depending on how many of the players you want to give up. So for me, like my trade that I'm proposing is pretty specific. Like I don't love Trae Young as like an end all be all player. But when I factor in contract, I factor in age, and I factor in the fact that he is both a true point guard and a scoring point guard, I think I like him as a player. And I also think that there's a way in which you can put him alongside somebody that makes everyone better Like, you know what I mean? So, like, but what I can't have is I can't have a Trae Young and Zach LaVine backcourt that gives up 140 points a night and Domantas Sabonis is in foul trouble every single game.
Yeah.
So my proposed trade would be Zach LaVine, the Spurs pick in 2027 and one other lottery protected pick from the Kings for Trae Young. And it's a straight salary swap. And people go, well, why would the Hawks do that?
It's a great question.
And the answer is the Hawks are looking to reset around a younger roster with Rishashay and Jalen Johnson and that group. You know, Capella's on his way out the door. They've got a they got rid of Bogdanovich during the season. Mm-hmm. Like Dyson Daniels is part of their future. And Trae Young is looking for an extension right now. And that extension is going to be 200 and something million bucks. He's owed basically the same exact money as Zach LaVine is. He's at 46 million and 48 million, 48.5. It's within like 500 grand of the Zach LaVine contract. Mm-hmm. So the player swap, the money works to swap out player for player. And so they're not taking on any additional money. They're not taking on any additional years of Zach LaVine. The contracts with Trae Young line up perfectly. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is you're swapping out a player, giving Dyson Daniels someone new to play with and handing the team to him and saying, okay, you're our guy now, and we're going to have a really good scoring wingman next to you. And then at the same time, you're collecting a couple of first-round picks in order to continue the build that you're trying to accomplish. So that's why they would do that. And as far as the Kings, like, look, I think Trae Young in Sacramento does not work at all next to LaVine. But I think Trae Young in Sacramento works perfectly fine next to a guy like Keon Ellis in the starting backcourt. Mm-hmm. And then having a guy like Malik Monk come off the bench and give you something, having Devin Carter still part of that. Like, I think that there's a way in, that you can create something with that backcourt that's different than what you currently have.
So I like this idea very much. And if you're able to get out of Zach LaVine's contract and acquire a star level point guard in the process, that is a slam dunk. No pun intended.
Yeah.
That is something you have to do. If you're building around Trae Young though, because he's 27 at the start of next year.
Okay.
Which means this is now your new window.
Yep.
This is not a rebuild. This is a going for it now with Trae Young. There is a very specific type of build that now needs to continue.
I totally agree.
Where there has to be an influx. And I think Scott Perry recognizes there has to be that influx of size and athleticism that we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And what is so appealing about Trae Young to me is not the scoring. He's going to give you 20 plus a night. He averaged 24.2. He's averaging 25.3 for his career. 24.2 last season. It's not only the assist numbers, he averaged 11.6 assists a game last year, but it's the way he playmakes that sets up his teammates. And I think Trae Young elevates the players around him offensively. I think he makes players better. Not where, wow, the Hawks have been contending for titles. That's not the case. But I think the quality of player you need offensively comes down a little bit, where you can go get a very defensive-minded, hustle, grit type of player.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get open. They're going to stand in the corner. They're going to get open threes off of Trae Young.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to break down a defense. He's going to touch the paint, and he is going to make the right pass to the open shooter. And now, maybe that three-point shooter is 33%, but man, he's 38% from the corner because that is just a wide-open look. And that's something that you want to generate. And that's something that I think can help carry the Kings offense around Trae Young. But we'll continue talking about this. We got to step aside on the radio side. We'll keep talking about this because there's a second part of this that goes along with it. This is not a one-part trade. There's a two-part trade. The second part of that trade is going to go toward what we're talking about right now with adding more size and athleticism. We'll get to that next. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. That's Joe Brazil. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you until noon, and then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. Those guys will take you up to 4 o'clock right here on ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento Sports Leader. We're talking trade machine. We're talking trade ideas. It's our very favorite thing. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. If you'd like to join the program, James, would you like to recap the first part of your two-part trade?
Yeah, the first part is I would offer, you know, again, I'm sure that the Hawks are in a very weird space.
Yeah,
they're in the middle of changing everything. They've gotten rid of their entire front office and restarting. I would offer Zach LaVine and a couple of first round picks, the Spurs 2027 unprotected, and then like another protected Kings pick, mm-hmm. like a 27 or a 28 Kings pick, in exchange for Trae Young.
Hmm.
Now Trae Young, again, once you get him in your door, you're going to have to sign him to an extension. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, he's entering the final 2 years of his deal. I think you can give him up to 4 years.
You're committing to Trae Young being your 1A.
Yeah.
Yeah, you money would. Is not an object anymore with him.
Well, that, and the other thing about Trae Young that I'll point out is Trae Young has spent his entire career playing with like true rim running centers, right? And it works. It does, although, you know, with guys like Clint Capella or, you know, name that center he's played with, but mm-hmm. most of them are that same type of center. I want to see if Trae Young can be an efficient player playing alongside a guy like Domas, where maybe his assist numbers drop from 11 a game to 9 a game,
mm-hmm.
But his shooting percentages go from like 34% from 3 to 37, 38% from 3, because he's a better shooter. We all know he's a better shooter. We just, you watch, he takes too many bad shots.
Takes some wild ass threes.
Because they are in a position where they need him to take some wild shots a lot of the time. And so I would like to see if he becomes a more like well-rounded player if he played alongside someone like Domas.
Would be interesting for sure. And the Hawks and where they're at, I'm so interested to see how they attack the offseason with Trae Young specifically.
Yeah, me too.
Because they could very easily just extend him and be like, yeah, Dyson Daniels with Zachary Risache and Jalen Johnson will be back healthy. And mm-hmm. and
Onyeka Okongwu,
thank you. I could pull his name out of my head. Onyeka Okongwu, and this is just what we're going to build around. We're committing to this. But it also wouldn't shock me if they did this type of deal you're talking about, where they go, man, we can get a couple of firsts. And get Trae Young out of here. We can still be competitive with Zach LaVine, but we can kind of figure it out with a war chest of picks that we've acquired.
Yeah, I think that that's the
key. Especially since they don't have picks because they dealt them to the Spurs.
They did, but then they also, I swear they got some of New Orleans picks back when they traded DeJounte Murray to New Orleans. So they don't have a lot of their own picks. They do have other people's picks.
Sure.
But either way, this is a team that, you know, when you look at their roster, it's very young, and they can't. They're at $143 million in payroll right now, with Trae Young making $46 million.
Mm-hmm.
So Capella and Caris LeVert are both free agents. Larry Nance is a free agent. Bone Tyland, David Roddy, Garrison Matthews, all those guys are free agents. So they're still going to have to spend money because there is a salary floor that you have to be at. But for them, it would get them to a point where, you know, Zach LaVine is falling off the books at the same time that Trae Young would. But Trae is going to sit there and want to, he's the whole time he's going to be asking for an extension.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not willing to give the extension, this is probably the time to trade him, because now he has 2 years left on his deal. That if you get into next season, or if you get to the trade deadline, it kind of becomes like the De'Aaron Fox thing.
Sure.
Right? Where you're like, okay, well, we only have you for a year and a half. How many first round picks am I going to have to give up for that?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is not that much. You know, it's sure. like two unprotected picks for sure, but you were hoping for a lot more than that at the beginning of the De'Aaron Fox trade season, including a young player like Stephon Castle or something. Mm-hmm. And the eventual yield was way less than what you'd hope for.
Yeah. For
Except
sure.
for you have a $49 million expiring contract next season in Zach yeah. LaVine. So, yeah.
And that is value to a lot of teams.
Yeah.
$49 million expiring, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The Elk Grove Kid Talk Lines, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. James, before we get to the second half of your trade, Salvador wants to give his own idea about a player the Kings can go get. Salvador, you're on the Insiders. What's up, man?
Hey, I guess morning from Wisconsin.
Salvador, can you do me a favor and turn down your radio?
From Wisconsin. Nice.
All right, Joe, can we pot him down until he's got that figured out? Thanks. Preach.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to, 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320. All right, Salvador, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I'll just turn it off. My question to James, somebody just told me about Anthony Black. My question was, I know we needed a point guard. So my question is about Anthony Black. What's your thoughts on Anthony Black? What would it cost us? I know he's on his final year, I believe. And his contract's about eight and a half. And if he's out there, wouldn't he be a pretty good player?
Okay. Yeah. So Anthony Black. Just so he's got two more years left.
Thanks for the call, Salvador. I had a great time. Go ahead, James.
On his rookie scale deal, he's got two more years left. So I don't know. Like, I mean, he's on a list of players that are young and that are athletic, and that you're thinking, okay, maybe that player will develop. The thing is, I don't think he did anything extremely well this year, and he's also on a team that's like so desperate for a point guard, that especially with the Jalen Suggs injury. So he started 10 games, he played 78 games at 24 minutes tonight, and averaged 9 points and three assists per game. I think he's got potential. But things like the fact that he shot 31.8% from three is a bit jarring. And, so maybe he makes sense. But again, you're looking at a guy who was like the sixth pick in the 2023 NBA draft. If the Kings were to go after Anthony Black, they're going to want something like the fourth pick from the 2022 NBA draft.
Mm.
They're going to want something like Keegan Murray to move for someone like Anthony. Although it's possible he might be like lower down, that he's not fitting in, or that they need a reset or something.
I don't think Anthony Black is on the Magic timeline.
Okay.
I think the Magic needs somebody who can contribute now. And I think if they can move Anthony Black for Malik Monk, a player who can credibly play point guard but also provide some scoring and shot creation, because they just don't have a ton of that on the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
That is where I think they would be willing to move a guy like Anthony Black, at least theoretically. Again, I don't know people in that front office. But if you're doing that, if you're the Kings and you're acquiring a player like Anthony Black, it's part of a tear down where, hey, here's this former sixth pick who's going into year three. We're going to take a gamble on this guy because, hey, you know what? We're not super interested in winning. And if he turns into SGA, awesome. If not, all right, well, we're rebuilding anyway. That's where I would go get that type of player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, if I'm the Kings, going to get Anthony Black as a player to help me compete in the immediate, because it's a gamble. Like you said, he's usually 2 years in, you get a pretty good idea of, okay, this guy's ascending, this guy's not.
Yes.
And I watched a weird amount of Magic this year because I had Paolo Banchero in a lot of underdog lineups. I was just never blown away by Anthony Black.
No, I think the good thing about Anthony Black, he's 6'7", plays point guard, so yeah. He's long, he is athletic,
sure.
He's got like the body that you're hoping for, but he's 21 years old, and so you're going to need to wait for him to develop. And if you're going to get Anthony Black, that's where you go out and you get a Tyus Jones. You pair him with a veteran that, sure, can help him, you know, kind of develop. But the problem is, like, he didn't exactly like jump off the page as someone who's fully developing, mm-hmm, with Orlando. And if you're going like what you said, if you're going to reset the entire roster and the next move, like once you get done trading Monk and taking back Black and a couple of other, like, mm-hmm, something else to match salary, then the next move is like, where does DeMarco, where does LaVine go, where does Domas go? Like, that's the next step.
You're loading up on as many young players and picks as you can.
Yeah, young players and picks that actually make a bunch of, you know, like, that may or may not ever make it.
Yeah.
Right? So you're taking some gambles. So
So in a vacuum, I don't hate the idea, but I think it has to, again, I wouldn't just acquire Anthony Black just to get him. It would have to be a concerted effort to get young upside, get a lot of picks. And I mean, you're turning into the Wizards at that point.
Yeah, you're doing something that you're setting, you're completely changing the direction of your franchise. Yeah, because he's not there. He's not ready to, I mean, again, 24 minutes a game for 78 games.
And like you said, the opportunities this year with Orlando were there.
Yeah, especially with Suggs out for a huge portion of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that, but Franz Wagner out and Paolo Banchero out, they both had the ab tears, right?
Yeah.
Like both of them, that just creates more opportunity, and I don't know that he separated himself where I'd go, hey, this is the guy that I want to build around.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. So the second part of my trade.
Yeah, so we've got Zach LaVine and a couple picks heading to Atlanta for Trae Young, which sets in motion, okay, you got Trae Young in your starting backcourt. Now size, athleticism, defense have to be the focal point.
Yeah, and for that matter, shooting as well, because you know the way that Trae likes to work is he likes to have space, and you know he gets in the pick and roll, but he likes to have some space, and you're going to need shooters. So my next move is I'm calling the Miami Heat, and I'm offering DeRozan for Jaime Hawk, as in Duncan Robinson. And like it, as far as like financially, it's close to a net neutral trade. But I think, you know, the way that Jaime Jaquez fell out of favor there in the second half of the season is something that I would definitely key in on. Duncan Robinson is on a player option at $19.888 million for this next year. Let's see, Jaime Jaquez makes 3.8. So we're looking at like you're going to lose $1 million in salary. But now all of a sudden you have a jack of all trades, small forward, a guy that can play the three and the four in Jaquez, a guy who plays defense, who does all the dirty work, does all that stuff. A little bit raw, but.
Go ahead.
Okay. I must
You're
have
fine.
Said something.
No. This is about Jaime Jaquez and all the dirty work he does.
Oh, yeah, of course. But then on top of that, Duncan Robinson, who I think, you know, again, Miami, if they're going to, they wouldn't hate a trade where they're losing a $20 million guy that's not playing all that much. And he can shoot. You know, he's kind of a Kevin Huerter clone, if you will. And, you know, it gives you a backup two, backup three. And, you know, I think it would make sense for both teams just because I think they need a scoring punch to take some of the pressure off of Hero since they lost Jimmy Butler.
Okay. I don't hate that. I don't know if I'm trying to figure out why Miami would say no, particularly if Jaime Jaquez off-court stuff with Eric Spoelstra is real life.
I don't know if it is real life or not. I just know that the dude, you know, got down to 20 minutes a game this season, and he was a guy that they were building around, and all of a sudden they weren't.
Yeah, just fell out of favor.
Yeah, I like Jaime Jaquez's game, but again, you talk about, you know, when you go get a player like Trae Young who they can really score, pairing him with a guy like Jaquez who doesn't score that much.
Yeah, but he's just a dog.
Well, he is, and I also think in this scenario that it opens a door for Keegan Murray to become more of a scorer on your team, and for Keon Ellis to start in the backcourt, for Malik Monk to slide into his more natural position as a sixth man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if those are the couple of moves you're making, I think you dramatically improve your roster, and you give yourself a real direction, which is what we talked about earlier. You just have to commit to a direction. And if you're doing this where you're getting Trae Young and then you're getting Jaime Jaquez and you're getting Duncan Robinson, you are improving the cohesiveness of the basketball team you're building.
Yes.
which has to be, no matter what path they choose, whether it's tear it all down, trade everybody, or try and salvage a core out of this group and build around that, it has to be cohesive. It has to make sense. And that was the biggest issue with the Kings last year. It wasn't talent. It was that the roster doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but like you bring in Hawkes, if you were to bring back Jake LaRavia, that's one thing. If you pass on Jake LaRavia, you actually have a replacement, a guy who
sure
plays the same defense, who's under contract long-term, who you can lock up and keep him under contract long-term, mm-hmm, and that you can build with,
yeah,
and sort of give you something different than what you have right now.
All right, we'll continue talking about this. The 49ers also started minicamp today. I want to get into the idea of minicamp and things we should and should not be watching for. We'll do that. We'll have more NBA offseason coming up for you. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. I should say Kings offseason. We're not talking about NBA offseason in general. We're talking Kings. That's James Hamm. He's Joe Brazil. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Best shape of his life season, guys.
That's right.
It's the most annoying. So the 49ers open, well, a bunch of teams open mandatory minicamp today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already seeing what best shape of his life is a punchline. We all understand that to be the case, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody says that all the time, every year, during, whether it's baseball spring training, whether it's NBA training camp, whether it's NFL OTAs or minicamp.
Mm-hmm.
Best shape of his life. Guy played at 220 last year, down to 212. It's down to 212. Hey, shed 3% body fat.
He
said the lowest body fat percentage of his life. Feels moving better. Looks faster. Well, he looks faster out there.
It's really hard. Like, once you get to a certain age, the best shape of your life, you're like 17. That's like, it's like end stop. It's like, that's it. That's it. You're like 17 years old. You're like, I'm in great shape. I just got done playing a high school football season. You're in great shape.
With the NFL specifically, because the 49ers began mandatory minicamp today. With the NFL specifically, I don't care what shape a player's in June.
No. Well, they got like 3 more months to add weight.
And it does. Well, right. And it this is every sport, not just the NFL. I don't care what kind of shape you're in. Now, if there's a player who, let's say, I don't know, in the NFL, there was a player who, man, super talented, but he was on a pitch count all year because he just was never in shape.
Yeah.
Or he dealt with a hamstring thing all year because, you know what, he came into camp out of shape and was like, ugh. Okay, then that matters to me. But player who just wasn't very good, shed 15 pounds, like, no, they're probably still going to not be very good at the sport.
Yeah.
I don't care what shape they're in. Did they get better? Like, he's in great shape. Still can't shoot to save his life.
No. Nope.
But boy, he's going to run up and down like crazy.
Yeah.
That just, it is a universal punchline that still gets covered every time a player's like, yeah, drop 10 pounds this offseason. Oh my God. Hey, he looks more muscular too. Added some muscle. All right, man.
All right.
Cool. Can he play? Is that going to part? Keegan Murray came back in year two, looked like he'd bulked up. That translated to how he played defensively, and it mattered. It's like, wow, okay, that, cool.
Yeah.
But I don't care that he looked like he was in better shape at the Cal Classic. I need to see that translate.
Yeah, like Wilson brings up Mason Jones. Mason Jones lost like 40 pounds.
Best shape of his life, I heard.
Yeah, he definitely was in the best, and it did translate to a really good season at the G League. I keep laughing over here because, you know, we do this thing all the time where we go to Basketball Reference or Football Reference. And do you know Jaime Hawkes' nickname?
No, but I sure would like to.
Juan Wick. like John Wick. But, like, what in the name? What is happening?
What? No, that's a thumbs down. It's a thumbs down. What? Yeah. If this was a superstar NBA player, Jaime Hawk is good. I'm not trying to drag Jaime Hawk.
Yeah.
Jaime Hawk is a quality NBA player. He's not probably ever going to be an all NBA guy.
No, if I think he could be an all defensive team guy.
Sure. Yeah. But if he was, I don't want to necessarily dive all the way into this, but if he was Jason Tatum,
mm-hmm.
Juan Wick is great. Like that would be awesome.
Yeah.
But
if not, it kind of sounds racist.
A little.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, hey.
It's just, no, you don't get to have an awesome nickname if you're just like, yeah, no, he's a hustle guy.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Anyways, shout out to John Wick. I still got to watch the movies. Did you see Ballerina last night?
I haven't. I intend to go maybe tonight. I don't know. We have NBA Finals tomorrow night?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah.
You got an open night tonight.
Yeah, I might go.
There's
see
not even
it
hockey
tonight.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Not even Stanley Cup Final.
I don't even have trivia night.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah, go see Ballerina then.
Yeah, I probably will.
All right, very good. Excellent. 916-909-1320, 916-909-1320 is the Elk Grove Kia talk line. We're going to do this old school right now. Can I do this old school? Is this Don? No, I can't do it this way?
Dan?
All right. Well, sorry. Hey, if you're on the phone right now, call back. Joe had stepped out for a second, so I was trying to do a fun thing. But Joe, can you dump that phone call for me? Thanks. Appreciate you. Apparently, there's a lot of Anthony Black fans in the chatty house. I had no idea.
Mm.
But anyways, the 49ers began minicamp today, and I need this to be very clear. Mandatory minicamp is important. It's the first mandatory practices of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a two-day session. There are no pads on, and the coaching staff isn't going to make final decisions based on these 2 days.
No.
What matters with mandatory minicamp is, A, getting out healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That is step one. Step two, I do think it's interesting if Nick Martin is lining up with the first team. That's an interesting thing to me. Rookie third round pick lining up next to Fred Warner as the starting Will linebacker. Okay, that's something I'm going to file away for training camp. If whoever's starting at left guard, if they're the only person running with the ones at left guard, I'm filing that away for training camp.
Mm-hmm.
But player performance in these practices matters so little. It matters some for rookies, because this is where, if you're a rookie, can you just hang in this setting? No pads on. You're probably not really going full speed. You might do some full speed stuff, but can you hang in this setting? Can you set yourself a baseline where you can hit the ground running in training camp? Because what really matters now, and Kyle Shanahan will tell you this, in fact, I bet he talks about it today when he speaks to the media. What matters more is the 40 days away between the end of minicamp and the start of training camp. And what mandatory minicamp does is it like sets that baseline for the coaching staff. And it sets a baseline for you and how you can improve in your 40 days away. So when you get to training camp, the pads come on and the reps are live.
Yep.
That you can actually show, okay, I've earned this starting spot. I've earned this roster spot.
Yeah, I think for me, what these camps do also is they show the players that just flat out get it.
Yes.
And who doesn't.
Yep.
Like, you can understand the base concepts and you can start to improve every day and mm-hmm. show that you're grasping what's happening, the why,
yeah.
not just where I need to go run this.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to show me that you're learning and that you're taking the natural steps to get better at your position. And you can see that without pads on. Now, once sure. pads, you throw pads on guys, that's when you start to realize who's a dog and who's not,
yeah.
and who's, you know, whatever they're doing on the field, they might be really bright and be able to make all the right moves,
mm-hmm.
but then they don't have that next gear. They don't have that closing mm-hmm. speed to hit somebody. They don't have the pop mm-hmm. to knock somebody down,
yep.
Or they're not a guy who is good at wrapping somebody up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are a lot of things that you can learn at this stage, but then the next stage is like super, super valuable as well.
I think the way to frame this, and I agree with you, it's less about who's doing well in minicamp. And this applies to the 49ers, the Raiders, and every other NFL team that, mm-hmm. that you might be a fan of. It's less for me about who's doing well and more who's doing poorly.
Yeah.
I'm just going to pick on Nick Martin because he's the player that's in my head. Third round pick, linebacker, a player, top 75 pick who should probably start next to Fred Warner this year. If he just doesn't get it and it's like, man, Nick Martin does not look like an NFL player in this setting. That is a red flag.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if Nick Martin goes out, it's like, hey, Nick Martin was awesome. He had 3 pass breakups and 2 interceptions and was flying all over the field. Okay, great. That's thumbs up. You checked a box. That's just, okay, cool. He hit the requisite level to be ready for training camp. But it's all the things you just said. If we get to training camp and all of a sudden he's flying sideline to sideline and, hey, you know what? He's actually not getting to the running back. Or, man, he gets hung up on blocks a lot. That's where this stuff matters. You're going to – Mykel Williams, edge rusher. I don't care what Mykel Williams does. As long as he's able to stay on his feet, great. That's it. Because there's not pads. They're not getting hit. They're not blocking.
Yeah.
It's just so different, the sport. And if you've played football at any kind of level, if you've ever put pads on, you know that, hey, you know what? God, it's a different sport.
Yeah, I also think that there's the guy who goes out, and we have this every single year. You bring in guys and you're hoping they make the team, you're hoping they're contributors, but right away they look lost. And then the second thing that happens while they look lost is, oh, my hamstring doesn't feel good. Or, I tweaked something, I need to sit, I need to go to the trainer. Mm. And then you see this like perpetual cycle is like, oh yeah, you're probably not going to be here much longer.
Yep.
And that's something I think you can tell really quick. When is your love for the game there? Is your want to like play on every single down, all that stuff? Mm-hmm. Is it real? Or, you know, did you just talk about it at the combine and look really cool talking about smart stuff?
Yeah.
And you get on the field and it's like, okay, you're just not really a ball player.
Can I give a take sort of along those vaguely related to that?
Yeah.
Because I don't think it has to do with a desire or a will or a want to play. But I have deep concerns about Ricky Pearsall.
Oh, of course.
The 49ers 2024 first round pick.
Yeah,
I think
he should.
Can play. I think Ricky Pearsall can play, and I think he wants to. I think he wants desperately to play. The fact that last year, I'm going to take the gunshot part of this out because that was just such an unbelievable freak.
Yep.
Catastrophic thing that happened. Let's take that out of the picture. He had a hamstring injury early in camp, came back, and immediately was in a blue non-contact jersey because of a shoulder injury. And now he can't even get through OTAs without having a hamstring issue?
Yeah, that's not good.
This reeks to me of, hey, he can play. Like, when he's on the field, you can see, like, it's there. But he just never quite reaches that potential because all of a sudden we're getting to training camp and Obi's missing a couple more weeks in training camp. And now we're getting to week one and, hey, Ricky Pearsall didn't play much. How come? Well, he didn't practice a lot and he's still getting up to speed. Like, bro, you got to figure it out at some point.
Yep.
You got to be able to stay healthy. And I get that this sport is very violent. It's very physical. There are a lot of players who just flat out don't make it because you know what? Their body is not going to let them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my deep, deep concern with Ricky Pearsall right now. I think he is a player. I am just really worried that his body is not going to cooperate.
Yeah, and it's tough because I think these guys, they work out so incredibly hard during the offseason trying to obtain something and try to build on what they learned from last season. But if you're not doing things correctly, and if you're not doing like the yoga piece and, you know, or Pilates or something to do the stretching aspect of, you know, building your body, then you're going to have situations like this. It's a bummer because, you know, he's a young dude. Like, pulling his hamstring 2 years in a row isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
Shoulder injury isn't great. You know, like, there, you're worried about already whether he's going to be able to play not just 17 games, but is he going to be able to play 10?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big issue. Like, you can't just miss every single OTA and every single offseason because of injury.
Yeah.
We've seen that. Like, guys just, they peak way too early. And they never, ever get better. They get to a certain point and it's like, hey, that's who you are. It's who you are because you can't stay on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get better because, you know, again, the Marvin Bagley of the world.
Sure.
Like, how many times did you hurt your foot? Like, mm-hmm. The joke around Sacramento is he traveled with a boot in his bag just in case, you know, like just in case he needed to put the boot back on because he's hurt again.
Yeah.
And it's like you feel for him, but at the same time, like, you got to play through some things.
Well, and... I don't even, for me, it's not even that. It's just like, I'm worried that Ricky Pearsall specifically, his body is not.
Yeah.
It's a hamstring. You can't just go out and be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to go play an NFL game on this bum hamstring.
Nope.
It's that. So, like I said, I'm not writing the guy off. It's just that's red flags in year one and an immediate red flag in year two. Couldn't get through OTAs.
Oh, yeah. Huge, oof, huge.
Tough. Let's get, oh, I was going to get to Daniel on the Elk Grove Kia Talk Line to get us back into the NBA. Alas, is Daniel gone? He just left? All right.
Yeah, Daniel just dipped out, I guess.
Just like Joe.
Joe dipped out.
Jesse Tapia, everybody.
Yeah, just got business.
Yeah, Joe is a sought-after person in this building. So salute to Joe and appreciate Jesse for jumping in with us here on The Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jesse Tapia, now behind the glass. So, Jesse, I'm actually glad you're here.
Glad to be here because
you're my friend and I enjoy when you're here. But B, we didn't get to this yesterday, but Matt Moore, friend of the program, Matt Moore, Action Network, I believe, yeah, reported that the Celtics are looking for a first-round pick for Drew Holiday.
Hope they find it.
If it's one first and matching salary, are you acquiring Drew Holiday?
I don't know. I'd
imagine you'd want to give up, you're not giving up anything top 20 for Drew, I don't think.
Okay, so what if, okay, let me turn the trade on its head.
First.
How about this? How about you give up DeMar DeRozan and you give up Devin Carter, who was the 13th
pick.
First round pick who hasn't got to play.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's how you get around that. Mm-hmm. If you want to throw in a second, okay.
Yeah.
But I don't think that I'm giving up a true first round pick for Drew. Because I mean, he's owed $104 million over 3 years.
And Jesse, if I'm viewing this correctly, because you watch way more Celtics than I do, Drew Holiday started to look old this year.
Oh yeah. The shot, he's not.
So this
he didn't shoot
Boston.
The ball great. He didn't shoot the ball great. He took a step back defense. Still really good defensively. He's like, he's like a
little more vulnerable.
Yeah, a little bit more vulnerable. Yeah, that's right. Like, he's still really good, but like you see it now.
This isn't Boston. Like, ah, dang, the Tatum injury. We're going to have to really, this is Boston. Like, Drew Holiday is expensive and we would like to move on.
Yeah, you were probably moving off of Drew anyways before Tatum got hurt and all that.
I mean, Drew Holiday averaged 11 points and 3.9 assists per game.
I think that 11 points is his lowest since his rookie year, too. I think he shot 35% from three, which was one of his lowest percentages.
Yeah, 35.3. Yeah, like
that's why I don't want him for Sacramento. I don't like him.
I'm out, man. This is not an anti-Drew Holiday thing. This is just if I'm the Kings, I don't want to give up whatever it would take to get Drew Holiday, because Drew Holiday at this point feels like he's in the he's better than some of the point guards we've named.
Mm-hmm.
Just a kind of random veteran point guards. He's not that.
Yeah.
But he's also not in this tier of like, wow, this is a player you can build around, or wow, this is the missing piece. I think if you drop him onto like Houston.
Yeah, he needs to go to like a team where it's like, we're set. We just need you to play, make a bit, play some defense. Don't do much else.
Yeah.
Not that he's like horrible on offense. He had a really down year and all that, but it's just kind of like he needs to go to a contender. We don't need you to take us over the top, but you'd be a really great addition here.
And I think
I'm out.
I'm also concerned that he does the exact path of Mike Conley, where you go from like 14 points to 11.4 to 8.2,
mm-hmm.
and then the Kings they're on the hook for, you know, $65 million of a player 2 years left. And he's averaging 9 points a game, and you're like, okay, man, what are we doing here?
The Mike Conley thing works at 8 or 10 million or whatever he is, where he just sets up the offense and goes and hangs out in the corner. It doesn't work so much at 37 million.
No, and especially if you have not only the Kings in that scenario, they'd have the Zach LaVine to kind of do the Anthony Edwards thing.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have, you know, Domas to do some scoring. But then where are you going to get those extra points from if you're dropping all the way down to like 10 points a game off for your starting point guard?
Yeah, I like Drew Holiday a lot.
It's tough.
Five years ago, though, would have been.
He's still a good player, but he's not. It's not for the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah. I think that's in the nail on the head. All right, we'll get to the handoff next. One of D'Lo or KC will be in. Maybe it'll be Jesse. Who knows? That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and we're the Insiders. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube right here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Theater. We'll find a point guard for the Kings eventually. It feels like no matter what they do, it's going to be disappointing.
Line. I don't know. I love the Trae Young idea. I've been Trae Young for the last few weeks.
Any Trae Young, Ja Morant, LaMelo Ball edition, I'm here for.
LaMelo Ball I might be out on, depending on the deal.
Yeah, it's all depending on the deal.
Yeah. Well, like, yeah. Trae, I would give... I wouldn't be mad if the Kings gave up a little something for Trae. Like, LaMelo only plays, like, 40 games
a
season.
The injury stuff is a problem.
Yeah.
No doubt. Oh, we'll get to the handoff with... It looks like Damian Barling is going to be in for the handoff today. On the Insiders, we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Jesse Toppy in for Joe Brazil. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Are John Collins and Cam Johnson still things, do you think?
I don't know. I'm going to guess no.
Like that because it's a new front office. So if you did not follow the Kings closely last season, John Collins and Cam Johnson were frequently in trade rumors with the Kings.
Yeah, I mean, multiple times it looked like there was talk that players had been told that John Collins was on his way to Sacramento, mm-hmm. that the trade was going through. And before that, they were like, the Cam Johnson stuff was so incredibly close,
mm-hmm.
like multiple times, like on draft night, they almost got Cam Johnson and then it just kept playing out. They kept trying to get him.
Mm-hmm.
Brooklyn wouldn't give up, they wanted 2 first-round picks for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I mean, like at this point, like what Cam Johnson's 29 going on 30s, like mm-hmm. his contract is getting, it's getting closer to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. I mean, would I take Cam Johnson on my team? Yeah, but it would mean that I've moved on from some other guys too.
Cam Johnson was a lot funner idea when De'Aaron Fox and this whole thing was still put together.
Yeah, that's kind of why I brought them up. And it's a new front office, so I like the Cam Johnson thing. Okay, it's a wing, he can shoot, he plays some defense, but
mm-hmm.
maybe if we were a little bit more put together here.
Yeah, feels kind of uninspiring. Let's get to the handoff. Damian Barling from D'Lo and KC, they are coming up next. I'll go from noon to 4 right here on ESPN 1320. What's up, man? Oh, my
What's
bad.
Happening?
That's on me. My fault. No, talking trades.
Okay.
A lot of trade ideas. Do you want to hear James' trade idea?
I do.
Where did the other chair go?
I don't know.
I didn't even notice that until you got here. And
I don't know.
There was nowhere for you
there
to sit.
There were 3 here yesterday, which means someone this morning. All right.
You want to go check in on that maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe you have an idea?
I have an idea. I have an idea.
Is it maybe down in Studio 4, you think?
1, 2, 3, 4, yeah.
It's either that or Paul Marshall, I guess.
Yeah. Well.
Well, that damn Paul Marshall, he's been known to be our nemesis.
Go ahead, James.
Regularly giving me headaches.
There we go.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, so.
Paul Marshall's never given me a headache.
Can't wait for football season.
Well, that's not a headache. That's just different.
He got very upset about that.
He has strong football takes.
He does have strong football takes.
He's the king of the drive-by take, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You're sitting there minding 100%. Your business. And Paul Marshall just walks by like this. Hey, Lamar Jackson, not a pro bowler.
And then he walks away. Yeah.
Come on.
You're like, hey.
He's 60 feet away. Yeah, and you're like, wait, what? And he's just like, yeah, fumbles too much. No, he just does. He does.
No, it's just the point where you want to go, hey, screw you, man.
To hell with you.
Yeah.
You don't know him like that.
Yeah. That's my quarterback.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right.
Trade ideas.
Trade ideas. Sorry.
So my trade idea I came up with today, Zach LaVine, Spurs 2027 pick and a protected 26 or 27 pick from the Kings for Trae Young.
Okay.
Salaries match up perfectly. You don't even have to add players or subtract players.
And Atlanta feels like they've got a score, comes off the books quicker than Trae does.
Well, they have the same amount of years, but Trae wants an extension right now.
Mm.
Yeah, Trae's mm-hmm. wanting to get paid.
Yeah, and so, he's 4 years younger.
And he's an option, right?
He has
a player option?
1 year at 46 yep. and then a player option at 48.5.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd be stunned if
Which
he plays
he'll absolutely opt out, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you'd have to sign him to an extension this summer.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
There's Charlie with a chair.
Thank you, Charlie.
It's Charlie.
This is the one time he's not paying attention to me. That's fine. He knew where to look. He looked in Studio 4. That's where it was.
That's funny.
I know there were extra people in Studio 4 today.
Mm.
You know what? Let's not go to the Eagle Studio, which is right next door.
Yeah.
Let's see
Why would
how-
we do that?
Let's see if we can get under D'Lo's skin at some point today. Mission accomplished,
bro. absolutely spectacular.
Okay, so that's the first part of this.
I love that.
That's what I said. Absolutely. If you can get out of Zach LaVine's contract and get a star level point guard in the same deal,
I love that.
That move just by itself is a home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's get to the second part.
Second part is a take.
Okay, wait a minute. Second part of the same trade?
No, it's a two part play.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
Because if you're getting Trae Young, you need to now add wings.
Someone
depth.
To play defense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So literally, yes.
Okay,
I'm taking DeMar and dealing him to Miami for Jaime Jaquez and for
Duncan Robinson.
Okay.
So I get my shooter.
I'm good at
who's got an expiring contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get Jaime Jaquez.
Okay. I'm good. We know that there's at least something there with Miami. I doubt their interest in DeMar DeRozan has died within the last 11 months. So,
and I think their interest in Jaime Jaquez as a player has died.
I believe that's accurate.
Well,
yeah. there's taking a hit.
There's videotape evidence to prove.
Oh, no. I did not know that.
No, I mean, you'd see his minutes last year.
Oh.
Kind of.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like evidence of...
No. No.
Like, whoa,
no.
When did that happen?
No.
Whoa.
There's a rumor if you're not keeping up, because we've referenced it, there's a rumor that Jaime Jaquez slept with Eric Spoelstra's wife. That is the bit.
And it's his ex-wife, not his current.
Oh, I thought it was his current wife and
it's
now
his
ex-wife.
That's
how it was.
It's now his ex-wife.
Okay, he didn't get remarried then. It's the woman. Because there was always the report that Miami waited to sign Eric Spoelstra to his contract extension till after the divorce was final.
Yeah.
Which I have no idea if that's true, but that's...
Yeah, that's after it had already come to a settlement.
That's the greatest I've got your back moment in history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah,
for some reason, I thought he remarried, but I guess not. Okay, well, thank goodness. Well, all right.
So it sounds like Jaime Jaquez could be on his way out of Miami.
Well,
and again, this is another spot where, dude, if you can... DeMar DeRozan is not a fit here, I don't think. And if you can go get two players who very clearly fit,
I don't love paying.
It's just a no-brainer for me.
Duncan Robinson, $20 million, but it's just 1 year and then you're done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And like the dude can shoot.
Yeah,
I mean he's your new Kevin Huerter.
We talked about this a little bit earlier.
Year one, Kevin Huerter.
Yeah, maybe.
Your new old Kevin Huerter.
Yeah, please.
If you're the Hawks, are you trading Trey? This is where I get hung up on this.
Trey doesn't fit with that young group, I feel. Like, you've had all these high picks, and, like, unless you're ready to win now, why are you giving Trey Young, like, a 5-year max extension or whatever it may be? I figure you'd want to collect picks and just kind of develop this group more, no?
That's where I'm at. That's where I think they're at, too.
Is he?
And they have a whole new front office.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Trey is head scratching to me. I genuinely, like, if I was Atlanta, I don't know what I would do. I don't feel like I would trade him, though. Of all of the names that have been brought up, Atlanta's the one, the Trae Young one is the one where I just don't understand this.
They have the issue.
LaMelo, I do, because you're garbage and you're not even approaching getting better.
Yeah.
Atlanta, I don't know that they're that different from Sacramento in that front office can go, we could be a pretty decent team. We could be a really solid team in this conference with a few tweaks. We don't have to rip everything apart.
And that's where I don't necessarily agree on the timeline thing. Because Jalen Johnson is not 3 or 4 years away. Jalen Johnson is here.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the other one? Onyeka Okongwu became a starter this year. He is here.
He is ready to go. Yeah.
Dyson Daniels has arrived. He is here.
Yeah.
This is not. Risache might need a couple of more years, but this isn't some team that, hey, you know what? They got a lot of guys who are not productive now, but hey, in the future. Trey's only 27.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm 100% with you.
They're a couple years. They could be, like you said, a couple of tweaks. They could be really good next year.
That's the one that has just left me the most confused. I was listening to Zach Lowe this morning talking about Trae Young, and we have that written in today's show, but it's interesting. It's like there's not a big market for him, and I don't think Atlanta's actually looking to move him.
Mm.
But, you know, that he's not saying Atlanta's not looking to move. He's like, I don't think they would for reasons that we're discussing right now. Like, why? You make a few changes to the roster, you have a like a decent little young team right there that in that conference can make top six. In that conference can, you know, at worst, you're regularly competing at the higher end of the play-in tournament.
Sure.
And that's probably worst-case scenario for a team that puts itself together. I don't look at Atlanta and Charlotte as the same thing. Atlanta is close enough for me to feel like I could. They're no different than Sacramento, in my opinion.
Well, they're 40 and 42.
I believe. Well, then they're Twinsies. Exactly the same as Sacramento. And that, like, I think both groups can be like, yeah, if we just do a couple of things. Now, we could talk about, I think if Atlanta makes the right moves, they might have a stronger long-term path than Sacramento does. But again, like, I'm not of the belief you have to trade everyone on Sacramento and tear this whole thing down. You can make the playoffs next year. You could probably make the playoffs for the next couple of years. Now, what happens after that? I have no idea. Scott Perry is going to have to use the next couple of off seasons to figure that out. But, like, immediately, yeah, there's enough there that you can manage this offseason right and be in a good position. And for Atlanta, to go back to the original point, for Atlanta, I don't think managing the offseason is trading Trey.
I did not get to that portion of this particular Zach Lowe podcast because I've not gotten to listen to a lot of pods lately. So I've had some stacked up and I've just gone back and listened. So I've heard Zach Lowe say the same thing about the finals a bunch of times in a row. Mm-hmm. So I just went back and listened to him. And I had to turn it off when he said that he picked the Thunder in five. But then after Indiana won game one, he moved his pick to the Thunder in six-ish.
Yeah,
six-ish? I mean, so five, six, seven?
That's
like
not...
I just turned... I was so annoyed I turned
that's
it
That's not that different than what Anthony Slater said. It's just people going all in on they think the win was a fluke. They think what the Pacers did was a fluke, and so if they had it in five, they're trying to convince themselves they're not going to win the next four, and so they'll give the little buffer, okay, Indiana might fall into one more, but it's going to be when it's 3-1, and no one's going to care, and then the series will end in six.
Oklahoma City's not going into Indiana winning two.
I don't think so either.
I'm not. I'm back on Monday. There will be two games since then. I'm expecting to come back to a 2-2 series. I don't know who wins which game, but I think Oklahoma City's really good. I like Oklahoma City a lot, but man, I don't think they go get both in Indiana.
If Indiana wins in six, I would just prefer they win in five.
Oklahoma City?
Oklahoma City. If Oklahoma City wins in six, I just prefer they win in five because we're on the post game after game five.
Oh.
So just win. Just win that night.
Which post? I was going to say a channel, but I don't know which channel it is.
It's ABC 10. It's with
ABC
Matt and 10. Kevin. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Check out D'Lo and KC. They look great in suits.
Great in suits.
There we go.
Absolutely. James, appreciate you. Jesse, appreciate you. What you guys got coming up on D'Lo and KC? I forgot to do that bit.
Trista, it's Tuesday, so Trista.
Of course.
For anywhere from 30 to minutes to 60. Who knows? We'll figure it out live. Jason Jones, final hour of the show. Obviously, a lot of conversation like this and trying to figure out. Someone asked James yesterday, actually, what was the direction of where Monty McNair was going with this roster? We're going to try to figure out what direction the Sacramento Kings are going to go this offseason and how the first move may give a pretty strong indication of what that is.
Can't wait. D'Lo and KC coming up next for James Hamm, Joe Brazil, and Jesse Tapia. I'm Kyle Madsen. The Insider's back tomorrow at 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1320, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, where Sacramento sports leader. Until then, drink water. Be nice, people. See ya!